Hi there, Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Jill Hubbard and Dr. Sherry Denham, and your phone calls today at 1-800-229-3000.
Taking my call. I love listening to you guys.
I'm kind of in a valley as far as my faith. She has a tumor on her lung and she's in kidney failure. And my question is, how do I tell her that she's dying?
In the court systems, teenagers usually have a lot of ability to say where they want to spend their time.
Change is not what you say, change is what you do.
Do you ever disagree with him to his face?
Very rare.
Here's what I think cremation is. It is a dust acceleration program.
You're going to go forward. You're going to do the next right thing. You're going to sin no more. And he's going to have to sit with that.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. This is a Focus Friday program, and we're focusing on abuse and the recovery from abuse. And joining me are Dr. Sherry Denham and Dr. Jill Hubbard. Hi there.
Hello.
Hello, Steve.
You guys have had a tremendous experience with abuse and people that are struggling with abuse. What is one of the big hurdles that an abused person has to get over? Maybe you help them deal with this big, big hurdle to start with, to get well from abuse.
Well, I think one of the first things is the fear of exposing the secret. I think that is such a huge hurdle because they spend so much time trying to protect that and, you know, not let others know.
You know, there in one of the local towns, there is a man that has 9 women have accused him of sexual assault in his store. And one was assaulted in 2009 and is just now, because of the other women, stepping forward and saying, it was me, too. And I just think, boy, that's
a lot of shame.
She had decided to keep the secret.
Very
sad. But it is
difficult.
Because
what's wrong
difficult
with me
to
that
admit.
This has happened?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and sometimes it's fear on top of that.
Well, yeah,
you know, especially, you know, I hate
of
to
the
say
abuser.
This, but sometimes it's maybe a law enforcement person or it's someone in high authority, in high position. And so how can I bring that out if this is something where I feel I could be hurt? You know, I mean, somebody.
Well, a lot of times there's threatening that goes along with the abuse, right? So the fear is very real.
Okay, so that's one of the first things is to come out of hiding and to say it's happened and admit it. What's something else that you have to help a person deal with?
I think for me, I find it's helping the person integrate both their mind, like the thoughts and the emotions behind the abuse.
Right.
Because sometimes people, when abuse happens, it's kind of like they go into their head more, you know, and they get stuck in these beliefs, like and it's a belief that's justified, right? It might look like I can't trust anyone. That's one of the standards beliefs that is a kind of a stronghold in I can't trust anyone. And so helping them go back into the emotion of the pain and help move them forward to that place of I can choose who I can trust. It seems like such an easy statement. Like, why can't I just write that on a post-it and put it on my mirror? You know, but that it's not something that you can just convince yourself out of. What I find is you've really got to help people go back into some of that emotional pain and move them forward to that's where they were then. They're not there now.
How about
And the abuse affects them at various different levels, right? It's not just at a cognitive level. It's at an emotional level. It's at a sensory motor level.
And the body level.
Body.
Their body manifests the trauma and the abuse.
How about the issue of, oh, I must have done something to bring this on myself?
Oh, I think
common.
That's one of the myths. And
it's
very
common.
Yeah, and they're often told that, too, by the abuser.
Yeah.
Or they should have done something,
right.
You know, and they were four when they were molested, you know.
Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come right back with more of New Life Live.
At New Life, we are passionate about helping people experience recovery. And it's no exception when it comes to recovery from the addiction to drugs or alcohol. We are very grateful to have found what we believe is the premier facility to offer a Christian 12-step model of care. It treats the whole person and offers biblical values as the foundation for treating the mind, body, and spirit. Our partner in drug and alcohol addiction provides exemplary medical and psychiatric care, as well as Christian-based psychotherapy, pastoral counseling, biblical studies and meditation, educational groups, worship and prayer, and a Christian 12-step program. The approach is non-denominational and guides the patient to experience freedom through a renewed relationship with Jesus Christ. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you or someone you love is struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. That's 1-800-639-5433 or go to newlife.com. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Jill Hubbard, Dr. Sherry Denham. We're going to go to our phone calls. We're going to talk with Michelle from Kingston, Pennsylvania. WRGN is the station. Hi there.
Hi.
How could we help you today?
Well, okay, I wanted to talk with you. First, I wanted to say that I'm in recovery from different abuse, a lot of abuse in my past. However, unfortunately, my son, who is 18, had begun to use abusive patterns, and I recently had to put him out of the house. It's like the third or fourth time I've actually put him out, and this time I'm taking a stand.
Abusing you?
I did the right thing.
Abusing you verbally?
Verbally, mentally, punching, threatening to kill me in my sleep. Yeah, just.
Well, you absolutely did the right thing, but where does all this rage and anger come from?
Well, when he was six, he was traumatized by some neighbor kids who took sexual advantage of him, and we were in church at the time, very deeply involved with the Lord. He had accepted the Lord at 3 years old, gave his life to Christ.
Mm.
And we were in a spirit-filled church. He would dance around and praise God. He had dreams and visions for just a little guy. And I prayed over him the whole time I was pregnant because I wanted to give him back to God.
Right.
And after that, he just completely lost it. His mind was always, you know, I'm having bad thoughts. We were in counseling for 7 or 8 years with all different kinds of government therapy, you know, mobile therapy, behavioral specialist, et cetera, et cetera. I think I moved a lot, which might have affected him. It didn't give him a sense of stability because I myself was still learning how to, you know, learn how to live. I had a traumatic past.
But you think he never really resolved the issues?
He never resolved that. And then at age 13, things began to escalate. When it happened to him, it was something that made me face mine as well. Because I'd sort of, you know, sort of put everything down by using drugs and alcohol or whatever I could to mask the pain and just be a mom, which it was good in the beginning because I wasn't struggling with the repercussions
so
much.
Right.
And so when he got abused, of course, that brought up my past.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so then I was dealing with what was going on with me. I lost a job. And so we were in counseling, trying to get me help and him help, which he never would discuss it.
All right. So how could we help you today?
Well, I had to put him out of the house, and he blames me, and I blame me a lot of times. I'm in recovery from, you know, my husband abusing me.
Okay, let's just say it's your fault, okay?
Okay, it's my fault. Okay. I've accepted responsibility.
Okay, so he still has a job to do, and that's to deal with it, whether it's your fault or not. I'm not saying it's your fault, but I'm just saying, you know, go to the extremely horrible extreme and that it is your fault. Well, he has to deal with that reality. That's his job.
Right.
I don't think it's your fault.
By a judge who was, come to find out, a judge who put kids away for cash, and he was recently, so he was gone for 15 months, and he should have been placed probably in a mental facility or kids placement where he could deal with his mental health issues. And he put him in a placement where he was dealing with inner city kids, and he's been protected. Mm. So he had rage when he came out of there.
Okay,
and
blamed me. Okay, so what are you hoping that we could help you with?
I want to know okay, putting him out of the house, he has no money, he has no friends, we have no family. I mean, he's pretty much, you know, there's this guilt that I'm feeling by, you know, having put him out.
Okay, let's look at what are your options other than putting him out? He didn't respond.
Because every option I gave him,
yeah.
He
didn't respond.
He wouldn't take it. He wouldn't take it. He's had many, many opportunities.
All right, let's hear from Jill and Sherry. But it sounds like to me you ran out of options. What do you think?
Okay.
What should she do?
Well, I'm hearing that, Michelle, of course, as the mom, you know, you are going to feel guilty because, you know, there's no way you could do everything for him that he needed when you were so struggling as well. So it sounds like there was a lot of chaos for both of you. And like you said, your unresolved issues that you grew up with, it's really painful, isn't it? And it's,
I just found a counselor 4 months ago who really understands that I've been searching
good.
For years.
You know, and I hate hearing that, but sometimes that is what happens. You know, as much as you try to seek help, sometimes finding the right place can be difficult. And certainly at certain ages, when excuse me, when our children go through things, especially with abuse, that can bring it all up. So I think, you know, Steve was trying to kind of help you pinpoint, yes, you may feel guilty. It may have been all your fault or a percentage your fault. But at some point, your son has to start to say, okay, but what am I going to do about my life?
And accountability. I said, you know, you have to accept responsibility for your choices.
Right,
just
right.
Like I had to, even though it's painful. I wanted to blame my parents my whole life.
Right.
And they haven't even accepted responsibility. But I have to say, okay, but God.
Right.
You know, he will take this broken life. He has in a lot of ways and used me, but I sort of got stuck for a while because I thought, I can't get me better because my son is interfering with my recovery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that can feel like a problem. But no matter what, you know, even though it's unfair that this happened to you and this happened to your son, you know, again, we still have to be the ones to seek the help. And so you can offer him all kinds of help, and I think that is the right thing to do. But you can't help him if your life is being threatened.
Right.
When it sounds like, as you said, that it feels so good, Michelle, to finally find a counselor that understands the trauma. And there is a difference.
Yeah.
There are those that specialize in abuse and trauma. And what I'm wondering with your son is if he's really found a place that really understands and can help to treat him. I'm going to bring up something, you know, I know it's the beginning of the program and I was going to share it at some point, but it feels like a good time to do it. I use a tool in the trauma work that I do called EMDR. Has he ever had it? Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. Have you ever heard about that?
No, and he refuses. When I finally did find a therapist, and actually a group of therapists to specifically deal with this and to accept our insurance, he at that point had just been through so much, he refused. Because he wanted rather go out and get high and deal with his problems by self-medicating.
Well, and let me tell you that's really common. Because when trauma happens, it actually does what's called it kindles your brain. It turns the brain up on high, meaning there's too much blood flow going on. If you think about kindling a fire, like throwing coals in a fire, well, it's like your brain gets turned on high.
Wow.
And so there's parts of the brain that get turned up. The limbic system, which causes depression. There's something called the cingulate gyrus, which is a gear shifter. That's the part of our brain that causes us to think about the thoughts over and over again and keep bringing the abuse back. And then there's these things called the basal ganglia that are gas pedals in the brain, and they get turned up. So I call that, it's like a hamster on a wheel. Mm-hmm. And so that hamster keeps going around in our brain, and we use pot, we use alcohol, we use things
to
try to calm the brain down, but it doesn't really heal the wound.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I wish we had something more definitive for you. But I think the most definitive thing we have is that you did what you had to do because you ran out of options.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else we want to add?
Well, just that good that you found some resources for him and you let him know that when he's ready to deal with it, that you'll help him.
And then it's the right treatment. It's getting him into something that specializes in trauma.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Glad you called. Let's go to Tom, Atlanta, Georgia. He watches us on the NRB Network. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you today?
Very well, thank you. How could we help you?
Well, I don't know if you can or not. I was abused quite a bit as a young child growing up, and my younger brother as well.
Sexual abuse?
And mental and physical.
Mm. So sorry,
on a consistent basis for years and years.
Okay.
And my mother obviously was abused and mistreated, and she had a lot of anger in her, which she passed on to me and my younger brother. And
well, how has this affected your life later in life?
I'd lust all the time.
Really? Tell me about, down in the depths of your heart, tell me about the anger that you feel.
Well, I don't know how to answer that. Can you word it a different way?
Do you find yourself angry often at stuff, frustrated with people?
I would use the word frustrated more so than anger, but someone else might use a different word.
Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't say that you're full of rage from time to time over this?
True, I would say that.
You would say that. Okay. Because that really does go with the compulsive and obsessive lusting is anger. And I often say to people, okay, whatever else you do, you need to work on the anger. And it's going to be very difficult for you to reach a level of forgiveness that puts your heart in a peaceful place. But that's the direction you need to hit.
Right.
Now, are you doing anything to help yourself in the area of lusting?
Well, no. I've tried lots of things.
Have you thought about going to Every Man's Battle?
No, sir. Physically and financially, I'm not able to.
What if we had a scholarship for you?
Well, that would be I would be very appreciative of that.
Okay, maybe someone would donate a scholarship. I don't know. But we're not going to know, and we'll talk to you off the air, and we'll see if somebody might step up and help you.
Well, thank you.
Do you have any groups that you could go to? A life recovery group, a celebrate recovery group?
None in my area that I know of, and I have looked trying to find some kind of a support system.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You need to continue that search.
There are even online chats that offer support groups, different types of 12-step groups, survivors groups that you can go on. It's not the same as being in person, but if you don't have access or have a difficult time getting there, it's a really good option. And also for people that want to be anonymous.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
How is the anger connected to the lusting?
Well, there is there are a lot of different angles on this, but one would be if I'm angry, that means that I didn't get what I deserve, and I'm angry about that, or I got something that I did not deserve, and I'm angry about that, and so the anger kind of develops an entitlement within your heart that you deserve more, you're entitled to more. You're entitled to anything that makes you feel better.
I can sense that in my life.
Okay. And so when it comes to images of other women, you know, those aren't, you're not entitled to those. They don't belong to you. It's not your wife.
Right.
It's somebody's daughter. It's somebody's wife or girlfriend. But you feel entitled to that. Not consciously entitled. But you feel like you have a right to do whatever it takes to make yourself feel better because the pain is so great from the abuse.
And I've got a lot of layers, obviously, on that pain and stuff. It's just built up over the years. The mechanism and the way God makes us to cover stuff up so we can keep on.
Well, and that's right. It's shame, right? Mm-hmm. Shame so often, and that causes further isolation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, as I'm hearing you talk, Tom, you sound sad. Mm-hmm. You sound like you're down and maybe even depressed.
Well, I am a little bit now because I have looked and I have looked and I have looked trying to find some means of. I've gone to two different 50-hour conferences on trauma and abuse. I have I've gone to several different counselors. I have read over 100 books.
Wow.
Christian living.
All right, hold on. I got to go to a break. But off the air, we're going to see if we can't get you into Every Man's Battle because, see, that's going to help you in the area you need it the most. And it'll put you in a place where you're connected with other men. And then the follow-up is so connecting. I think it could be the very thing that you need. So we're going to connect you with all of that. 1-800-NEW-LIFE is the number to call.
I wish I was who you think I am. The one you thought you married. The ideal husband, the amazing dad, the great lover. But my mind is filled with darkness. With images that I can't erase. I want so desperately to be the man you dreamed of. The man I know I can be. I am terrified to talk to you about this. But I want to. I need to. I want us to be close just as badly as you do. Can I talk to you? Can we be totally honest and know that we love each other enough to be open?
At New Life, we've helped thousands of men just like this find hope, healing, and a plan to move forward with their lives through our one-of-a-kind Every Man's Battle Intensive Weekend. Call us right now at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
I need help. I want help. I can't do this on my own.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, this is Stephen Arterburn from New Life Ministries. We know that Christian counseling changes lives. We hear evidence of that every day.
I feel like I'm a person for the first time in my life. I feel like I wasn't whole before or that I couldn't enjoy life. I had such a big weight on my shoulders that I had nothing to look forward to. I'm such a better wife and I'm a better daughter, friend, a better worker. I feel absolutely free.
Our nationwide network of licensed Christian counselors means there is help available near you.
If anybody is considering Christian counseling, then they need to do it. They need to take that step.
You don't have to be stuck where you are, but you can't really expect to change unless you take action. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. It could be the start of a whole new life for you. Christian counseling works, and we can help. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE today. Someone who cares is always there at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
We'd love to hear from you if you have a question or comment. Call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to New Life Live.
All right. We're back. Let's talk with Lynn from Washington, D.C. Hello, Lynn. Welcome to New Life. You watch on NRB.
That's correct. How are you today?
We're doing fine. How could we help you?
Well, I wanted to thank you guys. I've been listening to your show, and I don't know, I probably heard you years ago, but I think it's a good thing because so many people are not aware of what is available for help, and you bring that to them.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I have an issue right now. I was married in a 20-year marriage, and I left that marriage 10 years ago, and I'm remarried now for 6 years. So the first marriage became verbally and mentally abusive, became physical when the shoving started.
Yeah.
And that kind of did something to me at the time. But I suffer with bad anxiety, and since he died a year ago, and it was really bizarre when he died, because I went through, the first husband died, and I went through a grief cycle, and it sort of triggered this anxiety, and I can't seem to shake it.
Is it intense and severe, or is it kind of just a floating, always there, lingering anxiety?
It's triggered sometimes by memories or comments. If I'm having a conversation and I have a memory with the grief, it was really strange that I worked so hard to try and remember the good and not the bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting past that. And then when he died, I remembered, well, when I left, all I could remember was the bad, and I was really, really angry. And I got past my anger, and I was trying to be forgiving in my heart. And then when he died, I started remembering the good stuff. And that was so bizarre, because I'm now married for 6 years. Well, now it's 7. So he died a year ago. So it's been a year since he died, and I'm still struggling with, I think that my physical reaction came into play. I was conquering the physical reaction,
mm-hmm.
and now it's like when it's this physical thing, I don't have any control.
Yeah.
I don't know if you understand what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But 10 years out of the marriage, remarried, he dies, and then all of this stuff comes back into my head.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's like, I thought you're supposed to go forward and leave things in the past.
Right.
And I did go through 2 years worth of counseling when I left, and I had been gone through counseling when I was still in that marriage. We tried counseling like 3 or 4 times, but he wouldn't complete it. He'd only go to like 2 sessions and give up.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We tried it like 4 times.
Let's see what Jill and Sherry believe to be perhaps the source of the anxiety after all these years. What do you, anybody?
Did you say you just finished working on the anger, or kind of found some resolution for that recently? Did you say?
Well, I just couldn't.
That was before.
Basically, it's like I had forgotten. It literally had forgotten many of the things, the abuse things that he did. But I also forgot when I was angry when I left, back when we split, which was 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The anger was so horrible, I couldn't stay in the anger. So I tried to move forward with good things in my life, which meant that, you know, I just felt like if I kept revisiting the horrible things, I was so angry, it made me physically ill.
I just find sometimes when we're at a place in where maybe it's safe for those emotions to come up, they'll kind of bubble up to the surface because we're really at a place that we can deal with them.
So you think they're just now coming up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not uncommon that, because you've got to really be in a safe place, a safe relationship, kind of safe
I'm wondering
physically,
about your
emotionally.
Marriage now.
Where,
my marriage now, my gosh, it's night and day.
Okay.
Night and day,
the
this man
then.
Is so calm.
Yeah.
He's so calm,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I needed. That's what everyone said.
Yeah. And
everyone
so
said,
it's,
because I was a mess trying to do things on my own.
Of course. So
and
it's,
I'm still like that.
Well, it sounds like it's calm enough now that something can come to the surface so you actually have the space to deal with it.
Well, and sometimes I think we deal with something to the degree that we are able to deal with it. And
okay.
then, like you're saying, Sherry, when it is safe at a later time, it's like we circle back around. We don't go back to the same spot. It's not like being at square one.
No.
But it's like,
feel like you're a lunatic. You're not.
Yeah, it's like a new pocket of stuff that we have to go back in and do some more work. And certainly the death does sound like a trigger. You know, one,
right.
you were connected to this man, you know?
For 20 years, I have 2 children.
That's
I see the boys, and they sound like him, they walk like him.
Yeah.
And I think deep down, there was a desire that you would heal this man, that you
Absolutely.
Would be able to fix him.
Not me heal him, but I wanted God to.
Right, and the death was a finality that it was not going to happen. He was not going to be healed on this earth. He was not going to be fixed. God didn't come in. And I think that can be a real trigger, that death can be a trigger of the regret that we have. That no, there was nothing I could do. Surely I could have done more. Then you kind of feel guilty about feeling that way because you're married to a nice guy.
Yeah. Oh, very true, very nice guy.
So,
very
I don't
nice
know.
Guy.
I just think they're all...
He lets me not do nothing, which isn't always good.
Okay, here is what we're saying.
Do nothing, rather.
It would be normal for you to feel a lot of different feelings at the death of a man you were with for 20 years. And you were tearing up there just talking about it. So maybe you allow yourself to feel even more emotion for a while until that emotion is resolved.
to do some more grieving and, and work in this area.
Right. You've got some ungrieved loss there that just needs to be cleaned up a little bit. Okay?
But you're not crazy.
No, definitely not.
Not at all.
All right, we'll take a break and we'll come back right after this with more New Life Live.
At New Life, we are passionate about helping people experience recovery. And it's no exception when it comes to recovery from the addiction to drugs or alcohol. We are very grateful to have found what we believe is the premier facility to offer a Christian 12-step model of care. It treats the whole person and offers biblical values as the foundation for treating the mind, body, and spirit. Our partner in drug and alcohol addiction provides exemplary medical and psychiatric care, as well as Christian-based psychotherapy, pastoral counseling, biblical studies and meditation, educational groups, worship and prayer, and a Christian 12-step program. The approach is non-denominational and guides the patient to experience freedom through a renewed relationship with Jesus Christ. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you or someone you love is struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. That's 1-800-639-5433 or go to newlife.com. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
I just absolutely believe in the mission of New Life, and I feel that the materials provided and the biblical counseling perspective is so valuable and not available in so many places, and New Life and membership and club New Life provides access to the live program and also CDs available to listen to. So I know it's easy to turn on the radio and receive the benefit, but those services don't come without expense, and I would sure like to see the program remain on. So I would like to challenge listeners who listen and receive benefit but haven't yet given to actually give this year and continue the giving, of course, because more people need to hear.
Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE and ask how you can start your Club New Life membership today. 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to the program.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Sherry Denham, Dr. Jill Hubbard. And if you are thinking about making a year-end gift, would you think about making it right now? This has been probably the toughest fall I've experienced. I think our ministry has been in greater jeopardy than any other time. And so I'm not just asking you to give more, but I'm asking you perhaps to give sooner than you ever thought about doing. It would sure bless us greatly if you could support us with a year-end gift 30 days before the year ends. So if you could, would you call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE or go to newlife.com? Let's go over here to Mike from Chatsworth, California. KKLA is the station. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
How you doing? How can we help you today?
Well, I'm trying to figure out how to communicate with my estranged girlfriend, who I'm guessing she's withdrawing because of some past abuses that she's admitted to me.
Okay. Why would she withdraw from you, a totally safe person who cares so much about her?
She admitted, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's how she feels.
That you're not safe, or that just the depth of the relationship brings up the past, or what? Be more specific with us.
She says that it doesn't make any sense that she's withdrawing, but it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so she, communication is only one way. And I don't know if I should continue at all, or if I do, how to go about it.
How long have you been together?
Let's see. Well, I knew her. I've known her for quite some time, but we just reconnected in January, and then the relationship is going on until May. And then it, she started having these feelings, and I've seen her once since then. And that went fine, but after that, it just went back to the incommunicado.
So it's been ambivalent pretty much from the get-go, is that right?
Ambivalent.
Ambivalent meaning she's kind of been in and out. You guys have kind of been on and off. More distant.
We were exclusive for
4 months.
Yeah. And then after that.
But then the closer you got to her, that's when she became more ambivalent, more indecisive about the relationship?
I think so, yes.
Okay. And Mike, do you think she just wants out of this relationship? Or, what's your sense? Like, is she dating anybody else?
I don't think so. Okay. She mentioned her old boyfriend. I had said that I'd seen her for a few days. And when I had, she mentioned her old boyfriend, but it was kind of like they would. She wasn't specific about it.
Okay,
she just kind of blew it off.
Well, and she may kind of hop from person to person as she gets uncomfortable. But I think in terms of what you would say to her is that if her abusive past is coming up, first of all, you have to ask yourself, are you willing to walk in that with her? But I would ask her, if first of all, she initially saw you as a safe person, and would she be willing to allow you to be a part of her working through some of that abuse? Like being someone that, maybe takes a step towards her and then stops and allows her to evaluate how it feels. And when she wants to run, for her, would she be willing to talk about those feelings of when she wants to run and what's coming up for her? Because as she gets closer to you, the non-logical part is the things from the past get put onto you. So even though you're the same, you take on a different form for her. Mm-hmm. And it's not logical.
It's like emotion trumps logic all day long.
Mm-hmm.
If she starts to become, as Jill's kind of bringing up the idea of, let's say she's moving closer towards you and her heart starts to want to fall,
mm-hmm.
or, if she's falling for you or starts feeling the feelings of love, if she's had some breaches in abuse, in attachment, then mm-hmm. it might be
just
that
be
she
petrified.
Just, yeah, it's like, I can't fall. I'm going to go away because I feel like I'm out of control.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if I love you, you might hurt me. So, retreat may be the way that she copes with her fear of being hurt. But it doesn't serve her well in actually engaging and bonding and, mm-hmm. and being in a relationship where she can heal. But it might be that fear moves her backwards.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sure, absolutely.
So do you typically pursue her when she walks away, or do you?
Yes, and then part of the reason why I was calling you is I don't want to, overwhelm her with one-sided communication. So
mm-hmm.
what to do and to what degree or if at all?
Well, certainly everything needs to be gentle, and everything needs to be less than more, wouldn't you say, given her
mm-hmm.
reaction to
him?
Well,
and you need mm-hmm. to be constantly asking her, does this feel okay? Does it scare you when I pursue you?
Yeah. And don't do anything that doesn't feel okay.
Right.
Well, it might be that his pursuit feels really good. It's safe and distant. But it probably doesn't really fulfill a lot in you, Mike, right? Yeah,
no.
It feels like you're expending a lot of energy without a lot of reciprocation, without anything coming back.
But that's the way it is when you get married. I mean, really, that's a man. His.
Would you like to share? Doesn't sound like very much fun.
No, his directive from God is no matter what, you die for this wife of yours. And there are a lot of people in marriages that they're not getting much back. I am getting a lot back. I'm getting a lot of reciprocation. Just don't. I'm not
good. I'm glad you clarified.
Yeah, I mean, I've got it great. So, but I know there are a lot of people that their marriage is horrible.
That's true.
And they try and they do everything. But that's what men are called to do: die for her, no matter what, whether you get anything back. So
but,
you're kind of
but
in
Mike
training.
Isn't married yet?
No,
right?
No, but he's in training. And so you can say to yourself when you're not being reciprocated back to that, okay, this is building character in me, and I can really grow from this and as a man who is one day going to be married.
Mm-hmm. So there might
minor
be
point.
A little bit of her liking that you're kind of fighting for her in a sense. But I think it's perfectly okay to request some kind of indication that it's okay that you continue to pursue her.
Yeah.
I would. Yeah. I mean
because
really,
because
even
for you.
Someone who's had abuse,
yeah,
they do, I kind of look at them like a dove in a cleft of a rock. Mm-hmm. Right? They've got to be drawn out.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to be drawn out. But
right.
If they don't want to come out, then there's
then
nothing
not
you can do.
Yeah.
And sometimes people get outside stuck on the ledge waiting for this dove to come out. But the dove has to choose to come out. And if the dove doesn't have to come out, you choose to come out, then at some point you may have to just walk away and find another relationship that someone
that
will
wants
be willing.
What you have.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to send you a copy of The Exceptional Life, and I hope that that'll be a blessing to you. I think you're going to be a blessing to her. I appreciate that. Okay. I've got 10 things that I want abused people to know.
Okay?
So you can comment at any point or
okay.
not. But first thing is, you are older, wiser, and stronger than when you were abused.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so, easy to continue to feel like I'm still that 3-year-old with no power, no presence, no ability. That's first thing.
I agree. I have a trauma group that I've got 8 women right now that were gone for 6 months. We're doing another 6. And these group renamed themselves instead of the trauma group. They're called the Brave. They're now the Brave Sisters. They've
there
moved from
go.
The Brave Women.
I like that.
And they transitioned now second
good.
Term. We're the Brave Sisters. But they are amazing people, trauma survivors.
Second thing is, forgiveness is a path you must travel down. You may not be ready. It may take you years, but it's a path. You've got to tell yourself, okay, one of these days I have got to forgive this. Number 3, God was there. Matthew 18:10 says that his angels, your angels, were in his presence, making sure he did not miss what was happening to you. He was grieved over it. He doesn't say he would prevent it. It says he would help wipe away your tears. But God knew about this, and he cared about it. It didn't go unnoticed by the creator of the universe. Give you the other 7 when we get back after this.
Hi, everybody. Max Licato here. As a pastor, I've seen how important it is for people to come and get good Christian counsel. People make decisions that turn out to be the wrong decision. I heard Steve Arterburn say on New Life not too long ago that the same thinking that got you into your mess isn't going to get you out of it. If you find yourself in a spot and you don't know what the next right thing to do is, then won't you call the good people at New Life? They have a network of Christian counselors around the country that's more than 850 strong. Call today 1-800-NEW-LIFE, that's 1-800-639-5433, and tell them you need to find someone to help you. They're likely to have a counselor in your area to help you with whatever you're struggling with. It will be good, godly counsel. Call today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 639-5433.
I counsel people every single day. I help marriages. I help broken people find healing. I teach the good news of a Savior that loves us. But why can't I accept it myself and break free from this bondage? I can't stop looking at pictures that I shouldn't be looking at, and fantasizing and lusting, and now I've taken it a step further and gone to a strip club. I have to stop. I want to stop.
At New Life, we've helped thousands of men just like this find hope, healing, and a plan to move forward with their lives through our one-of-a-kind Every Man's Battle Intensive Weekend. Call us right now at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
I need help, and I can't do this on my own. I want to be the pastor that God wants me to be.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
To find out more information about New Life, or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Sherry Denham, Dr. Jill Hubbard, and I'm going through 10 things I wish every abused person would know.
Can I comment on your last one when you were saying God is there? I think that's a really hard one for some people because it's like, why wouldn't he intervene?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like having a parent know about it and not do something.
Right.
So that's a hard thing to work through.
And there, you know, we have to say, well, we're in an evil world. We're out of the garden. If it was still in the garden, it wouldn't happen.
Right.
All right, number four, the person who abused you back then does not represent other people in your life today. And it's really easy to project onto every, if you were abused by a man, to project onto every man that every man is like that. Every man is evil or whatever. Or same guys with women. But I want you to know that if you work through it, you will project less onto the other people in your life and the relationships will get easier.
And the importance of working through it, Steve, because if they don't, they may actually pick someone else that might abuse them or treat them poorly.
Right.
I mean, we
it's
see
so
that a
common.
Lot.
It's like they've almost been branded.
Yeah.
Okay, right? Here's number five. Grief work is a huge part of abuse recovery. And people say, well, what do you mean? Well, you're grieving the loss of your innocence, grieving the loss of a life without abuse, all of that
loss
grief
of
work.
Childhood.
There
loss
you are.
Of,
yeah.
Yep.
Okay. The tendency to repeat the abuse, even though it seems like it was the last thing you would ever do, but the tendency is quite common. Mm-hmm. And so, If you have any kind of urge in that area, let's just say your mother was full of rage and now you're raging at your children. Well, that's an indication you've got to do some more work.
Because we, at some level, we identify with the aggressor in order to not be the victim.
See? So please get the work done rather than, I mean, I this morning.
Can you explain that, Jill? That was like
it feels
a powerful statement.
Well,
we identify
and then it's
with the aggressor.
And it's a common statement that we've heard, but it feels more powerful to be in that position where you have the control. And so it's almost like when you lash out at someone new, an innocent victim, it's almost like lashing out at the abuser, but it just feels better. And so the tendency to repeat that and to want to be on the side where it's
the powerful,
powerful
side
instead of the victim
controlling.
Side.
All right. Number seven, it wasn't your fault. Now, a lot of people say, well, there was seductive behavior on my part. Well, there might have been seductive behavior because kids do seductive things. But that didn't mean you were using seductive behavior because you wanted to have sex with somebody. It just meant that we do that sometimes. So it was not your fault. Don't rationalize or whatever. Somebody in power over you abused you. And it might have been a pastor with power, a person at work. It might have been husband can abuse or an adult when you were a child. But, you know, don't blame yourself when somebody more powerful than you stepped in and abused you.
Well, and let me say this. Sometimes what happens is survivors of abuse or someone who's been abused, where that gets kind of muddy in their mind is that they kept going back to the abuser because at some level they felt special.
Right.
Yes.
There was a relationship that was set. No. That may have been the only place that they were getting love.
And
so the love got confused with abuse. And so they may feel like, why did I go back? But as they really start unpacking, well, what were you really wanting? It was the love. It wasn't the...
And the specialness. Like
Okay.
Eight and nine go together. Eight is turn it around as soon as you can. And nine, is give yourself time to heal. Now, what I mean by turn it around is that what God, I think, can do to redeem this is when you go through the recovery process and you're reaching out to help other people. That's turning it around. Mm. So you want that to happen in your life before you die, but you've got to give yourself plenty of time in the healing process. It might take, if you decide today, okay, I'm finally going to deal with all the stuff here. It might take you 3 years, 4 years or something. So you don't go from, okay, I'm going to do something with this and I'm going to help people. You may be so broken that you can't. So you need that time. Number 10 is that you are not damaged goods.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. You, in the eyes of God, are clean and pure, and God wants the best for you. You're not second class. You are a child of God. He loves you. He cares about you. And any amount of shame that you feel, that is the shame that should be on the person that abused you, not on you.
That's and so true, Steve.
So those are my 10 things that I wish somebody who was abused would know. And I hope that if you've been abused, that one or all of them would be helpful to you. Abuse.
Good point, Steve. Mm-hmm.
Now,
one
final word. Some of you that are listening right now are abusing someone. And God brought you to this program so you would hear me say, you have to get help. Because somebody's being abused by you. You have to get help. You might say, oh, I do really well, but then it's just that one time every week that I have that rage. Go get help for that. Some of you are having sex with your daughters, and you need to stop it. You need to go get help for that. And so my prayer is that God has brought you to this program at this particular time to hear me say, go get help.
Mm.
Go get help. Don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
Every ounce of pleasure or relief that you experience produces thousands of hours of grief and pain and heartache for the person you abuse. So go get help. Well,
thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
I just have to, it's so nice to just have somebody speak it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a word of protection and just honestly do something about it.
Right.
How often do you get to hear that on the air?
You will be more empowered when you do something than you
That's
are by the abuse.
Let me share a scripture with you. This is right out of Psalm 108. It says, I will wake the dawn with my song. I will thank you, Lord, among all the people. I will sing your praises among the nations, for your unfailing love is higher than the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the clouds. Be exalted, O God, above the highest heavens. May your glory shine over all the earth. Now rescue your beloved people. Answer and save us by your power. And it is only by God's power that we can be saved. And I hope and pray that if you're in a powerless situation, that you will reach that little trembling hand out to call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE, or you'll reach it out to a sister or a brother to get some help and connect so that there can be healing through that abuse and healing that will mature you and grow you. And you can truly reverse this. You can turn it around. And what Satan has meant for evil, God redeems it. And now it's being used for good to put something into someone else's life so they don't have to struggle the way you did. They don't have to be as much in pain as you were. So God bless you. Thank you for joining us today. And thank you, Dr. Sherry Denham. Thank you, Dr. Jill Hubbard. And to all of you that support, we've asked you if you possibly can make a year-end gift and make it now rather than later. We need your help. Toughest fall we've been through. And God has allowed us to continue to air this program right here. But we're not out of the woods. We need your help. And so whether you watch us or you listen to us, I'm asking God to touch your heart right now. Pick up the phone. Use your cell phone. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Or go online at newlife.com. 1-800-639-5433. Have a great day. And go do that next right thing we talk about so often here.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life.
We want you to know that we're here for you. But you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1018, Laguna Beach, California, 92652. Please join us on Monday for New Life Live.